Maine's legislative leaders discuss their priorities as the legislature gets set to reconvene in Augusta. Maine's legislature remains divided. The Senate is controlled by Republicans, with 18 Republicans and 17 Democrats. The House has a Democratic majority, 77 to 72, with two independents. Mike Thibodeau of Winterport has been reelected as Senate president. The House has a new leader. Sarah Gideon of Freeport is now Speaker of the House. There is a lot for them to tackle right away, from the state's opioid crisis to the rulemaking involved in implementing the new laws by referenda in November's election. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll discuss these issues and legislative priorities with Speaker of the House Sarah Gideon and Senate President Mike Thibodeau. What do you want to see from the legislature this session? What are your questions for its leaders? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Maine legislators back into session this week to take on some familiar issues. The state's opioid crisis and funding of Maine schools, to name but two. Other issues that would need to be addressed are the implementation of several recently passed ballot initiatives. Well, today I am joined by the two top legislative leaders in Maine. With me in our Augusta studio, Maine Senate President Michael Thibodeau. He is a Republican from Winterport. Also with me, House Speaker Sarah Gideon, a Democrat from Freeport. As always, we want to hear from you. What issues do you think should be at the top of the legislative agenda this issue? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Congratulations to both of you on your elections.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you.
I want to start by talking budget. Governor LePage will release his budget later this week. He has publicly expressed a desire to shrink government and institute, quote, major cuts. Mike Thibodeau, do you share the governor's goals to broadly reduce state government?
Sure. Well, I mean, look, if we can find a way to more efficiently deliver state government, we should be looking to do that every time. And, you know, over the past 6 years, I think that the governor has tried to do that. It looks like he's going to continue that trend of looking for more efficient ways to deliver the services. And, you know, at the end of the day, the budget that he proposes will be well vetted. There'll be plenty of opportunity for people that are affected both in positive and negative ways to weigh in on that. But, you know, we look forward to Friday getting here and getting a look at what he's proposing.
Are you optimistic, though? Do you think there's actually room to majorly cut the government?
I think that there are plenty of opportunities to deliver government in a more efficient way. I think we've made great strides in that, and we continue to look for more opportunities, yes.
Speaker Gideon, when you hear this, that the governor wants to he has a desire to shrink state government, what do you think?
Well, listen, I think when we think about government, we want government that works for people. It's not simply about shrinking government. It is about thinking about people's lives and how what we do here affects them every day, whether they're sitting around their kitchen table looking at their checkbooks, whether they're thinking about what kind of education their kids are getting in school. That is and will remain my top priority here.
Well, you're talking about education, and you know, how many years has it been since the mandate for 55% funding for essential programs and services was passed, and now the voters have spoken again with another way of funding education? Is that going to be the center of the legislature's work this session?
Yeah, well, listen, it's been more than a decade, actually, since that first referendum that you mentioned passed. The voters spoke loud and clear then that they wanted more funding for public education. I think that all of us recognize it's the greatest gift we give to ourselves as a society to teach our children and to give everyone an equal and excellent education everywhere in the state. And that's probably not happening right now. I think the frustration that voters felt over our inability to adequately fund education was expressed this year again at the ballot box. And, you know, there will be, without doubt, discussions among us and questions, as we've talked about before, even the Senate president and I, about what that looks like in implementation and around the budget.
Sure. So it isn't necessarily about adequately funding education. It's about where we get that funding. I think people are tired of their property taxes going up. Property taxes are a real burden, particularly on our elderly people who want to stay in their home, age in place, yet they're faced with this enormous burden of property taxes. So I think that referendum was really about their property taxes and where we are going to get the resources to fund our schools, because we have great public institutions. Our children are very fortunate to have the schools to go to that they have, but how we fund that is important. I think that the voters were clear. They are tired of their property tax bill going up.
There were five. That was one of five citizen initiatives on the ballot. That is more citizen initiatives than is usual here in Maine. What do you guys read into that? Some have suggested it's an indication about frustration with the legislature for not acting on issues important to Maine people. Sarah Gideon, do you agree? Will it affect the way you lead the idea that five different referenda questions were just on the last ballot and that four of the five passed?
That's right. I think there's a couple of lessons that we need to take away from this. I think, number one, we do understand that when there are issues that we repeatedly have in front of us and that we don't actually address or make progress on, that the people of Maine have learned that they can take that into their own hands and affect that change. And the question we need to ask ourselves is, what is the best and smartest way to make policy so that it's good for everyone? Is it with a single referendum question that doesn't necessarily have the amount of research and input and bipartisan conversation and impact? Or is it a citizen referendum question? And I hope that that spurs us to really sit down at the table together and stay at the table so that we can resolve the issues that we know are most important to Mainers every single day.
Mike Thibodeau, do you take any lessons from the number of referenda on this year's ballot or this past year's ballot?
You know, I think I have a little different perspective on the number of referendums that have popped up. I think that the founders of our state put in place a process where if the legislature didn't take action on issues, there was a way for the people to do that. But I'm not sure that that's exactly what's taking place here. We're having millions of dollars poured into our state with paid signature gatherers. I mean, you can hardly go to Walmart and not be accosted by somebody that wants you to sign a petition. These people are paid to do that. It's almost a hijacking of the process. I think it's unfortunate. I think we should be looking at a way to really return it to what it really was meant to be, which is a grassroots type of effort. If the legislature fails to live up to people's expectations, there's an opportunity to replace each and every one of us. Please do that. Make sure you go to the ballot box, vote your conscience. But this new onslaught of governing through a ballot initiative hasn't worked well in the state of California. They've ended up in kind of a really awkward position in many, many cases where they have laws that conflict. It's not a great way to set public policy. I would encourage people to resist that continued desire to do it that way. I think it's a mistake, and I'm in hopes that we can put in just a few minor adjustments that maybe return it back towards what our founders would have envisioned.
When you're talking about minor adjustments, are you talking about, for example, half of the ballot petitions being from each of the congressional districts or something more?
Sure. I think that's in part what I'm thinking about. Yeah. The idea that you can go to two southern counties in this state and get all the signatures you want or need without any input at all from the rest of the state is, I'm not sure that that's the best scenario. If there's a ballot initiative, it ought to be, have statewide support, have, maybe a little more well-rounded proposals coming forward rather than, just hanging out at the Walmart in South Portland and getting the signatures you need.
Well, let's talk about a couple more of those initiatives. I want to talk about the legalization of marijuana. I'll start with you, House Speaker Sarah Gideon. When will this law into effect? There's some talk about maybe a year's moratorium while rules are made and a system's put in place. Is that something that you see your caucus supporting?
So in terms of question one and the legalization of marijuana, I think what we recognize is there are a lot of complexities to this and issues, ancillary issues that come up that we need to deal with. These are some of the conversations the Senate President and I have had in terms of how we look at the scope of these issues, ranging from, you know, when you're driving impaired, how do we measure that and what consequences are there, to what is the sale and licensing and regulation of this look like. So we are trying to take an approach that is responsible, that ensures the safety of the public, but that also honors the fact that this referendum question did pass. I think that a moratorium, you know, I think until the regulation and licensing is set up, that is an automatic moratorium on the sale, in fact, and that gives us the space to do what we need to do.
So you don't believe the legislature needs to act specifically to put a moratorium in place, that just the way the system operates by creating the time it takes to create regulations will be the space and time that's needed?
So I think right now we know that there's a 9-month window that we have. We might need more time than that, and that's part of what we're trying to peel the layers off and understand. Will we need an additional, that, you know, that puts us in September basically. We might need until January or February. I am open to that option. I just want to do it in the most responsible way possible.
Okay, and I'll get to you, Speaker, Senate President Mike Thibodeau in just a second, but so anybody who believes that at the end of this month they're going to be able to buy marijuana legally in Maine is mistaken. This is not going to happen that quickly.
Well, I mean, in terms of being able to purchase marijuana, to sell marijuana, no, and we that will not be available until we actually have the licensing and regulation up and running. In terms of the legalization, you know, is it legal to possess marijuana? Is it legal to cultivate marijuana? Technically, that becomes legal when the law is implemented, which is in just a couple of days.
Okay, so just in a couple of days. Your take on what needs to happen at
sure.
this point?
Well, I actually do believe we should be talking about a moratorium, because the reality is in just a couple of days, not only will it be legal to possess, it will be legal for minors to possess. I can't imagine that our public schools want to deal with a situation like that. So we need very badly to have a conversation. The Speaker and I have started them conversations. I'm hoping to have more. I think that it's imperative that we give our public safety the tools, the time to be ready, because we're going to have drivers impaired by a new substance that has been introduced. A newly legal substance. There you go. And, you know, I recently received a letter from the hospitality industry, and there's stuff that we don't even – I guess I hadn't even contemplated. You know, the hospitality industry is saying to us, well, okay, what are we supposed to do with our smoking rooms? Do you want to be in a situation where you're vacationing in Maine and you rent a room and you happen to be a smoker? Well, does that mean you should – walk into a room that smells like Cheech and Chong hung out there over the weekend? I mean, I think not. I don't think that that's good for tourism in our state. So there are a lot of unanswered questions surrounding this newly passed legislation. I think we need a little bit of time for the legislature to take and implement some good public policy surrounding it. We're not going to get everything right. We're not going to get all the answers done in that time frame. But I do think that it's the responsible thing to do is to do just like they've done recently in Massachusetts. They have implemented a moratorium. Try to give the legislature there an opportunity to react to this new phenomenon.
Let me follow up on something you said about this being in just a couple days legal for minors to possess marijuana. That's up for debate, isn't it? That's not. There are people who disagree with you and say that's not how the law is.
That's not my interpretation. That's the interpretation of Maine's Attorney General. I believe that she is right, personally. I'm not in a position to argue that point. But our Attorney General, who is not, you know, not a Republican, she is a Democrat, you know, recently reelected. Believes that we are exposing minors to legalization of marijuana, and we ought to do something about that.
Sarah Gideon, do you agree?
Yeah, Jennifer, I'll just say if there is any chance that we are opening up that exposure for children, we completely agree that it's something that needs to be addressed as soon as possible. And as Senate President said, that is where the Attorney General stands. So we are going with the assumption that that is what this law has done, and we plan to.
That's what I was going to say. What happens at this point? Does this go before the Maine Supreme Court? Is there emergency legislation enacted between today and Thursday?
So I believe that the first thing we ought to do, and my understanding is the law has to go into effect so that we're changing the statute that is in place. I believe that we should have emergency legislation that needs to pass with a two-thirds majority, get it signed by the chief executive, and that becomes the new law. Make that prohibition very clear very quickly.
I agree.
Okay. So another topic, House Republican Assistant Minority Leader Ellie Espling is calling for a new committee to specifically deal with the state's opioid crisis. New committees are not concocted regularly. Do you all each support the idea of creating a committee to deal with this crisis?
So I'll jump in first there. I absolutely support the idea of a concerted effort that is really organized around this. We clearly are losing this battle. We've seen more overdose deaths in 2016 than any year before, and more people addicted to opiates. So, you know, we've taken, I would say, limited action to date. We have worked together, but we need to do more. Whether that is creating a new committee, I think I am not ready to answer that question yet. Part of the what I look at in this is who is taking part in the conversation. As with many subjects here, we are not necessarily experts on addiction, and we probably need to pull more people into the conversation on this battle that we need to make more headway
on. So you support the idea?
I support the idea of it might be a joint select committee, as Representative Espling put forward. It might be more of a task force that actually includes people from the healthcare world, from the law enforcement world, from the the world of people who are out there helping those who are addicted right now.
And Representative Espling has brought forward the idea of a joint select committee. Not every legislature has one. The Speaker and I have been talking about the possibility. There are several people that brought forward different ideas surrounding a joint select committee. The question quickly becomes, is this joint select committee better prepared to deal with the opioid crisis than the standing committees of jurisdiction already? And so we're wrestling with that. Unless there is a clear advantage to having a joint select committee, then I'd hesitate. But I want to understand the make no mistake, the opioid crisis is going to receive a tremendous amount of attention from the 128th legislature, whether we have a joint select committee or these bills and this crisis is work dealt with through the joint standing committees of jurisdiction. So regardless of whether we have a select committee or not, this is going to be one of the big topics of the 128th legislature.
It's probably no surprise to each of you that there are a lot of calls and questions coming in, including about the proposed, or excuse me, the ballot initiative on the minimum wage. So we'll get to that. But first, we have to take a break. Stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does the World Affairs Council, connecting Maine and the world with international speakers and global topics. Learn more at wacmaine.org. In most areas of Maine, over the air or on digital cable, you can watch not one, but three Maine public television channels. In addition to our Maine channel, we also offer World and Create. World explores our world through many of your favorite programs, such as NewsHour and Nova, and at different, perhaps more convenient times of the day. Create is our how-to channel, with cooking, carpentry, travel, gardening, painting, and craft programs. If you'd like more information about World or Create, including how to find them, see your experience member guide, visit mainepublic.org and click on television or call Maine Public Audience Services. Have you ever thought about traveling to Cuba? Well, here's an opportunity that's coming up. You can join other Maine Public Radio supporters this March for a 6-day visit to Havana. Our cultural exploration is a special charter trip created just for us and will involve sightseeing, tours, lectures, and offer insight and understanding of Cuba and its people. The deadline is fast approaching, so if you're interested in finding out more about this, visit mainepublic.org and click on events, or call Scott Marshallden at 207-330-4510. Again, that number, Scott Marshallden at 207-330-4510. Thanks for your interest. We hope to see you there.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Legislative Leadership, talking about the new session. With me in the studio, Maine Senate President Michael Thibodeau and Maine Speaker of the House, Sarah Gideon. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief, please brief, email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. I'm going to start with a couple related questions. First, an email from Corey. He writes, "The people pushing for the tip credit change don't respect the bartenders and servers enough to allow them to have a professional opinion. The fact that we don't ask them for their opinion and that when they give it, it's not accepted is disgraceful and makes me sick. If it ain't broke, don't break it. Reinstituting the tip credit to 50% would still make Maine servers and bartenders the highest hourly wage workers in their industry in comparison to other New England states. It's a good compromise." Corey, obviously talking about the increase in the minimum wage, also applying to tipped workers. And then we're also going to go to Charlie in Bangor, who I believe is talking about the same issue. Charlie, you're calling about the minimum wage, the new minimum wage law, correct?
Yes.
Go ahead. What's your concern?
Yeah, I don't understand why it's okay for the legislature to override the will of the voters. This was the one really decisive thing that came out of the Maine election, was the overwhelming attitude that Mainers want our lowest paid workers to have a raise, to get that boost to the economy, to help our small businesses, and to stop this really, really terrible pay discrimination that's gone on for so long that pays an 82% female workforce.
Okay,
less.
So Charlie, you believe that there should be no, as you would say, fiddling with the referendum question as written. It was passed and should go into effect. Mike Thibodeau, you're one of the people that believes that it does need to be fixed.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. And the reality is I've had multiple opportunities to meet with both restaurant owners, but also the servers, the people that take really good care of us when we go to these establishments. And they have all been very clear in the fact that they want this tip credit reinstated.
But can the legislature do this? I mean,
absolutely.
It was very clear
in the initiative.
We all voted upon.
With all due respect, okay, I'm not sure that everybody that went through the doors voted to increase the minimum wage because they wanted to make sure that they did away with the tip credit. This tip credit is something that has been part of the culture since the inception of a minimum wage in this country. You go to any other state in our nation, except for California, who has recently did this, and Washington State, and they're struggling, by the way, with the results of that. And you understand, as a patron of that restaurant, that young man or young lady or whoever it is that comes and waits on your table does a terrific job, and as part of them doing that terrific job, part of our culture is we leave them a tip. And in many, many cases, as a matter of fact, most cases, if you're good at your job as a waitress or a waiter, you are making substantially more than a minimum wage. As a matter of fact, most, if you talk to most of these folks, they're making $20-plus dollars per hour. And they earn it because they work really, really hard. It's part of the culture, and we do not want to do something that destroys that and makes it so that folks go in with the idea of, well, that person is making a minimum wage. I don't have to be part of continue to tip. People are very concerned about that. It isn't just the restaurant owners. It is the folks that are waiting your tables that are most concerned about it.
Sarah, you take a different view. You believe that the way it was passed is the way it should go into effect, correct?
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, I think the most important thing I'd want to emphasize to begin with is through the citizens' referendum, In this election, we were able to do something that the legislature has failed to act on time and time again, which is to give Mainers a raise. Basically, you know, the Maine people decided that that's what people who are earning the minimum wage deserve, an increase in their wages. And I'm really glad about that, and I support that completely. And there's been a lot of conversation about the tipped credit. I know I'm sitting down with restaurants in my district and with restaurant workers at the same time. And, you know, I'm trying to listen with open ears and an open mind. I think we want to make sure that we are doing the best thing for people, whether we're talking about individuals who work in a certain industry or whether we are talking about the economy as a whole. And I do have faith in Maine voters. I believe that they do their homework, that they know what they're voting on. I think they're a very smart population of people who take this job that they have of voting very seriously. So it is my intention to honor the will of the people, but I also think it's my responsibility to listen, be open-minded, and understand the consequences as a policymaker of everything that we do.
Well, let me ask you all a legal question. When people vote on a referendum question, are all they doing is offering a suggestion to the legislature, or are they passing a law?
No, to be clear, they are passing a law. That law goes into effect. I think that when we are talking about the tipped wage or any other piece of the minimum wage question that people are raising, this would be in the form of legislation that would actually change this law that comes into effect this month.
Okay. We'll go to another question. We'll go to, Nancy, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. This isn't an urgent issue, but it's something the legislature is going to have to deal with, and that is Maine's bicentennial in the year 2020. And if they get on the ball now, they can trademark a logo and a phrase, and then sell the use of those for coffee mugs and whatever, T-shirts and whatever, and that'll help them raise money. But I've been working at this for 4 years, and I can't find people interested. So that's my 2 cents. Thank you.
Well, Nancy, I appreciate the suggestion, and I'll make sure and mention that to the folks back in the office, see if we can maybe get a hold of somebody over in the Department of Tourism, remind them of the 200th anniversary, and maybe they'll pick up on that.
Nancy, thanks so much for your call. We're going to move on to Carol. This is an email. I would like to know what the legislature will do in 2017 to help seniors who are finding it very hard to make ends meet.
Great question, and thank you for that question. I think that this is an issue that we understand exists and that is only becoming more of an issue every day. One of the things we know for sure is that we have work to do, particularly around housing and allowing seniors to age in their homes and to do it safely. This is something that has been bipartisan work in the legislature in the past, and we are waiting for bonds to be released on that, and I hope we'll be working together in that way. Another way I think we can really focus on is looking at retraining seniors in the workforce, people who have retired but who are still ready and have working years ahead of them and are interested in participating in the workforce. And we've got workforce openings all over the state that we need to help fill.
And Jennifer, I mean, very proud of the fact that we doubled the homestead exemption in the last legislative cycle. And that didn't happen easily, but through a lot of negotiations, we put substantially more resources towards trying to keep that property tax bill down for our seniors. Many people that live on fixed incomes are the folks that are most affected by an increase in the property tax. So we were able to do that together. I expect that we're going to find a way to make sure that we get more resources to our public schools without continuing to pass that bill along in the form of a property tax bill. All them things are good for seniors that live in our state.
All right, moving to Booth Bay Harbor and Kathleen. Hi, Kathleen. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yes, I'd like to say something about the opioid law that went into effect. Although nobody can deny that there is a huge problem out there. I have to just look at the paper every day. There's a subcult of people like myself who have, I've had rheumatoid arthritis since I was 15. I'm 70 now. And I've been through all the drugs and the therapy and everything. My disease isn't active. I'm an artist by profession. I've been able to put my backpack on and travel all over the world and climb mountains with my husband because I have pain pills. And although I take them at a higher dose than the average person, I've habituated to a higher dose, not addicted. There's a big difference. And Dr. Portnoy, there's a very famous study about this. And this law is draconian. And I really feel like for the small number of people like myself who depend on pain pills to live a normal life, otherwise I'm going to be, just sitting around watching TV because I'm in pain all the time.
But Kathleen, let me ask you this question. What part of the bill do you believe will affect your life?
They need to look at the exemptions. Right now, the only exemptions are for cancer, palliative care. Somebody said, well, you could get it under palliative care. Well, I have chronic pain. And Dr. Hull is just, it's nonsense to say that it's proven that pain medication does not help chronic pain.
Okay, Kathleen, I'm going to let the legislators respond. Senate President Mike Thibodeau.
Sure. And Kathleen, I'm sorry to hear about your situation with your chronic pain. Nobody wants to suffer with that. And quite frankly, I don't think anybody in the legislature wants you to see folks not have access to the medication that they desperately need. That bill was brought forward by the Maine Hospital Association. We do have an opioid crisis on our hands. This was in response to that. Gordon Smith was a huge advocate for it, continues to be an advocate for it. I'm sure that the upcoming legislature will have an opportunity to look at, what we've done to make sure we've got it right. But, this wasn't something that any one legislator just came up with. This was actually brought to us by the Maine Hospital Association, the people that are, tasked with taking care of Mainers that have health needs.
Would you recommend that Kathleen contact her representative directly?
I would encourage that, and also reach out to the folks at Maine Hospital Association, because they were instrumental in crafting that legislation.
Yeah, and Kathleen, thank you for sharing your story. And I think we are very open to revisiting whether it is this or anything else, parts of laws that we've created that need to be improved. I know we have heard from a number of patients as well as physicians about some of the problems with that law, and I definitely am willing to investigate a little further.
Kathleen, thank you so much for your call. We're going to move to Yarmouth and Peter. Hi, Peter. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hey, thank you. I'm calling about question two, and I've been in business in Maine for 35 years. And this 10% maximum rate is now double what Massachusetts is. We were the highest in New England before this, and now we're actually the highest rate in the country at 200,000. It's so hard. I mean, I started in Maine. I started working in factories and the trades for 10 years, and now I pay that six-figure tax to Maine. And my accountants say I have to leave. I should leave. I should take my whole company with me. My biggest competitor is in New Hampshire and in Florida. And for instance, I don't put any more money into my home or my car or anything else. All our money goes in. Last year, I invested $50 million in the state of Maine. It's a big problem. I mean, Democrats.
Peter, let me ask you this. So the question two is a 3% tax on income over $200,000 a year. Is yours a small business in which your personal income is the same as your business tax?
Correct.
Yeah. All right.
It's not just that. It's not just that, Jennifer. If you look at it, how are we ever going to get new business in here? I mean, Nevada just got Tesla. Alabama gets Mercedes-Benz. Texas gets Google. I mean, we could do that. We have that sort of state. What kind of business, the high-tech businesses in Maine? I mean, I've been here long enough. I know those high-tech businesses that have come to Portland from the MIT, from Harvard. Are they going to come here at 10%, or are they going to stay in Massachusetts at 5%? I mean, we all want education. We all, I mean, I live in Yarmouth. This is some of the best schools in the state. I'm willing to pay those property taxes. What I'm saying, though, is we really have to compete with Massachusetts, and how are we going to do it if we're double the amount? They're not going to open their business here. They'll open it there.
And sure. Another one of the citizen initiatives that was passed in November, very close. He's repeating the concern of the opponents of the measure, but it did pass. Going forward, how do we create a business-friendly environment for Maine when this perception is very real?
Yeah. So, listen, I think we've heard from a number of people who have voiced similar concerns. And I think there's a couple of things at issue here. And Peter, you mentioned one. I mean, a commitment to public education, and I think that is something that we both agree on. And the fact that, you know, through the legislature, we have not been funding at public education. And so the citizens took this into their own hands. The question is this exactly the right way to do it? I think when we talk about any tax structure, we need to be looking at it in a very comprehensive way. For communities like Yarmouth, where there is a real commitment to your public education system, where, you know, people's property taxes are paid and can be supported by people who can pay them, then it is a very different situation than some of our other towns where there are a dwindling population left to support paying those property taxes. And that's really what this question was trying to get at. So I think this is probably going to be the subject of discussion around our budget. But for me, when I look at it, I can only look at it in terms of a comprehensive conversation about taxes, whether we're talking about the income tax as well as property taxes that people are paying, as well as sales tax and all the pieces of that three or even four-legged stool, as we might look at it.
Mike Thibodeau, could this be the catalyst for real tax reform, the kind of reform that's been discussed for most of my adult lifetime?
Sure. Well, I mean, look, Jennifer, I think that what passed, and by the way, by the narrowest of margins, this was not a, you know, people were very divided. The people of our state were very divided, but it passed. And to me, the message was clear: more funding for public education. At no point did I feel like people were, the message was we want to discourage investment in our state, that we want to punish our small businesses, that we want to make it harder for our hospitals and our institutions of higher learning to make it more difficult for them to recruit good people into our state. None of that is what the voters voted on. Yet that's what we're facing with this new tax. We are going to discourage investment. We're going to make it harder to recruit great people to come and live and work in Maine businesses. We've got to resist that. We've got to find an alternative. I think if we work together, we're going to accomplish that. But we've got to recognize that we have to come up with additional resources for our public schools.
We do have to take another short break. Stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Maine Audubon, building a culture of stewardship for Maine's wildlife and habitat since 1843, statewide and online at maineaudubon.org. Coffee by Design, a locally owned and operated micro roastery committed to 100% coffee traceability, coffeebydesign.com. And Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
Maine Public is announcing an exciting new comprehensive fundraising campaign, the largest in our history. $30 million, which is helping this organization grow to meet the needs of our diverse audience. We're calling it Charting a Bold Future, and the effort is designed to improve and expand our news coverage, grow our FM classical music network, make online programming even more widely available, while strengthening our overall organization. To learn how you can contribute and support Charting a Bold Future, go to mainepublic.org and click on the red donate button on the top right of the screen.
Are you or someone you know interested in a paid broadcast-related internship position this summer? Maine Public has two positions for college or technical school students interested in careers in the news, journalism, digital news, or technical and broadcasting fields. Candidates should preferably be attending an institution based in Maine or have an existing connection to the state of Maine. Application deadline is January 13th. For more information, visit mainepublic.org and click on About and then Careers. Or you can call Lisa Toner at 207-330-4506.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, I'm joined by the leaders of each of the House and Senate of the Maine Legislature. With me in our Augusta studio, Maine House Speaker Sarah Gideon and Senate President Michael Thibodeau. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Tomorrow's Maine Calling program is an economic forecast for the year 2017. We're going to preview that a little bit because the decisions you all are making this session really, in a lot of ways, are based on how you feel about how the state's doing. Where's it going? And Sarah, what about you? What do you feel about the direction of the state and how you make decisions about the future based on that?
Yeah. So, I mean, look, I think that the most important thing is to recognize that we all choose to live in this state because of the people and the quality of life in the place. And it's something that we all are very intent on preserving, both for ourselves and our lives and for our children and grandchildren in the future. But at the same time, we can recognize that things are changing in Maine. You know, our population is among the oldest of any state in the country. We also have seen these vibrant jobs of our past go away, and they're jobs that are not coming back. And I think the fundamental question that we need to be asking ourselves with everything that we do up here is, what does the future look like for Maine, and how do we actually direct it so that we keep that quality of life, but so that we're also building jobs in every part of the state, and really thinking about what those jobs of the future are and what our role in those creation of jobs is in government, or at least how do we start taking down the barriers that exist?
Sure. And Jennifer, look, having a well-educated workforce available is part of that discussion. We want to make sure that our public schools are doing a great job, and I think they are, of educating young people so that when somebody decides to move to Maine, not only do they receive a young person or a person in the workforce that has a great work ethic, but is also has the skills necessarily to be successful. And so we focus a lot on that. We want to make sure that our tax structure is competitive with other places. That's one of the problems with this 3%. It puts us out of step with the rest of the nation, makes it tough to attract that capital, that investment, the people that are going to create these jobs. That's a concern. But look, we have a lot of great resources a lot to be proud of. It doesn't matter whether it's our fishing industry or our agricultural industry. We've got a lot of resources. I know that many of the folks in the pulp and paper industry have seen some decline. But the reality is that resource still exists. And so long as that resource is there and growing, somebody's going to see an economic opportunity, whether it's this year, next year, or in the future, several years. Somebody's going to step forward and say, there's a resource that is, you know, we can tap into. But we don't have to plan all that. But we do have to make sure that our state is competitive, both in, as far as workforce development, but also tax code.
All right. Well, the first hearings of the new legislature are on Thursday. And they have to do with an issue that I suspect a lot of people don't completely understand, the proposal to build a new step-down psychiatric facility. I know this has been the topic of some rancor between the governor and certain legislators. What's going on? We need to build a step-down psychiatric facility, but why is this controversial? Sarah, you want to explain this to us?
Yeah, so I think the first thing to understand is it doesn't need to be controversial at all. You know, we have an issue here that we have not adequately dealt with for the past 3 years. That is that Riverview Psychiatric Hospital lost its certification from the federal government because there were real problems going on at the facility. And one of the problems that still lasts today is that there is overcrowding there. We have patients who no longer need hospital-level treatment, and they need someplace else to go because they're also not ready to just go out and go back into society and live in their homes. And so that's where this idea of a step-down unit comes in. You know, when we think about creating something like this. We're talking about a population of people who are still mentally ill, who have potentially committed crimes but are deemed not criminally responsible. And we have to take that responsibility very seriously in terms of how we protect the public, in terms of how we protect those people and the way that they are getting their treatment in a facility, in terms of the workers who take care of them. And this is a really difficult population of people to take care of. And most importantly, additionally, you know, we're talking about taxpayer dollars here and how we use taxpayer dollars to the tune of $3 to $5 million for a construction of a facility. The legislature has a role to play in that. We need to know that things are being done the right way, and that's why we're having this conversation right now. We need to make sure that the plan the administration has put into place is one that we can agree with, too.
So you just, it's a matter of protocol, that this is how it works, that you make a proposal and the legislature has to vet it before it's built.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would say protocol. I mean, I would say, look, people elect their governor. They also elect their legislators. And there is a role that they expect us to play to make sure that their taxpayer dollars are spent wisely, and to do that in a very transparent way. So protocol on that, sure. But most importantly, we just need to know that it's being done in a way that protects people.
Senate President Thibodeau, do you agree?
Sure. So this consent decree is something that's been going on for more than a decade, at a very, very long time, where the federal government said, hey, state of Maine, you're not doing a great job with this population of people, and because of that, we're going to step in and actually have a judge oversee this population of people. This has been going on far too long. And we have an opportunity on Thursday, I believe it's Thursday, that Judge Wathen is going to come and be part of the conversation. It's a great opportunity for the legislature to really learn, is this the step that's going to get us out from under that consent decree? Is this, what part of putting Maine back on the right path and putting us in good standing with the federal government and really having access to some federal funding, does this play? Look forward to hearing and trying to get an understanding of exactly that. Great opportunity on Thursday, for folks to ask questions and get a clear understanding. You know, we'll also have an opportunity, kind of gives you an opportunity to understand what we're doing with the taxpayer money. Very shortly, we'll be working on the budget, and much of the budget will have things that are, lines in it that are directly come from the expenditure of Riverview. So this is a great opportunity to really learn from the gentleman that has had oversight over that for a very long time, and Judge Wathen.
We have an email from John. The legislature could pass a clarifying emergency legislation on day one to address the issue of minor marijuana possession. As far as the cost of implementing rules and enforcement is concerned, the governor's statement that it would cost $5 million is way off base. I ran Maine's tobacco enforcement program for 15 years and never had a budget in excess of $1 million. Returning to the issue?
John, I'd love to talk to you. You can give us some insight there. We're looking forward to the staff is going to be meeting with the Department of Public Safety this week to talk about, from their perspective, what have we got to do? What kind of checks and balances do we need? If he's got insight, I'd encourage him to get a hold of my office, because I very much we're searching for them exact answers. What kind of enforcement do we need? What kind of staff do we need to make sure that this is regulated in a reasonable fashion? So,
all right, looking at my board here, every single call coming in has to do with the minimum wage question. We're almost out of time, but we will take one of those. We'll go to Christina calling from Kennebunk. Christina, you want to talk about what the legislature may or may not do with the minimum wage referendum, right?
Yes, thanks. I think one of our biggest concerns, those of us in the service industry, is we realized that perhaps the question when it was put out on the ballot really should have been perhaps two questions. There's two completely different ways people are getting paid here, and they were rolled into one. And I think that it's very hard for people to separate wanting to raise minimum wage for perhaps office workers or other standardly paid workers and not understand the tip credit. In fact, looking at the State of Maine's Citizen's Guide for the Initiative, which most people read before voting, the mention of the tip credit isn't even mentioned in the original question four. It's buried a little bit further. My other concern I would like to point out is, and Charlie from Bangor started to say it earlier, he was, you know, talking about female workers and sexual harassment, and, you know, where there's sexual harassment in every job. A lech is a lech is a lech, whether you're a server, whether you're a banker, or whether you're just somebody walking down the street. We're all okay here in the service industry. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. I make really, really surprisingly good money.
Great. Well, Christina, thank you for your call. And if we had time, we could probably go back and forth with all of the calls left on our board right now. Clearly continues to be a very controversial issue. Do you believe the legislature is going to be able to quickly, Sarah and Mike, be able to come to terms with this? Or is this going to be something that is a hot button issue till the end of the session?
So if I guess I'd be the first to say, I absolutely believe that the legislature has the ability, whether or not we get there or not, in the short term is another thing. Remember, what we really need to do in order to fix this is to get a two-thirds vote so that that the bill, being an emergency bill, would go into effect as soon as the chief executive was to sign it. Whether or not the votes are there to do that or not, I'm not sure, but I'm pretty confident that the votes are going to be there to fix this thing before the end of the session, which is a simple majority. So it becomes a question of when we fix it. Are we going to fix it in January, or are we going to have the new law go into effect sometime in September, October?
Sarah, do you believe it will be, as Mike Thibodeau, the word Mike Thibodeau used, fixed or not?
So I think we have different definitions of fixed, and you know, listen, it would take Democrats going along, you know, with maybe the Senate President's caucus to do such a thing. And I just don't know where we're at yet, to be very honest.
Okay, well, that's fair. And we are out of time, so I won't follow up. Thank you both for being here. Sarah Gideon, Democrat from Freeport and Speaker of the Maine House of Representatives. Mike Thibodeau is a Republican from Winterport and serving another term as Senate President. John Keimel ran the board today. We had help from Mal Leary. Thank you, Mal. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our archives at mainecalling.net. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, as I mentioned, join me and three leading economists for a look at what may be in store this year for Maine's economy. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.